Hi, this is Tony Robbins. Welcome to another edition of Power Talk. It doesn't take a genius to see that we're living in turbulent times. Now, the reason I bring this up is the title of this Power Talk is The Power of Anticipation, a skill that you and I and every person we meet has, but very few of us apply. And as a result, a lot of us experience pain in our lives, and a few of us experience tremendous pleasure, the pleasure that comes from being on the cutting edge, the pleasure that comes from being in control instead of in reaction, the pleasure that comes from predicting instead of reacting. What am I specifically talking about? I'm talking about the fact that all of us are always looking for the edge in life. We're looking for something that's going to help us to win, to go to the next level, to grow, to expand, to have a competitive advantage in business, to really direct our lives. And you know what? Whenever I meet people that are extremely successful, I'm always asking that question. What is the difference in this person? What makes them so much more effective than other people? And as you can guess, there isn't any one skill that makes people more effective. Certainly, there is a consistent commitment in these people to constantly and never-endingly improve their life. But you know what? The discipline of constant, never-ending improvement is not the only common denominator that I find. There is another consistent factor or skill that every one of these winners seems to share in common, whether this person be a peak performer in business, the best at what they do, or somebody who really knows how to make their relationship be passionate consistently, or someone who's a great parent, or whether it's a company on the cutting edge. I can tell you the common denominator is the ability to consistently anticipate change before it occurs. You know what? This skill can take stress out of your life, and this skill can make you incredibly successful. It can make you wealthy in financial terms. It can make you wealthy in emotional terms. It can take away fear. The power to anticipate is the power to shape the direction of your life and all those you care about. It could be argued that anticipation is the ultimate advantage. Why? Because ultimately in your life, it will be very easy to define the level of your success by one simple ability. Your ability to solve problems from the most intense, incredible, profound to the most ridiculous and simple. This really defines how your life turns out. Because on a natural flow, without a problem, without a challenge, everything seems to be fine. It's when these problems show up. Your level of success is how quickly, how easily, how elegantly can you solve these problems, these challenges, these things that get in the way of your being able to do what you want the moment you want to do it. Now, what's the challenge then? The challenge is most of us, when we get into a problem, find ourselves immersed and we find ourselves in reaction to a problem. It's happening right now. We're trying to solve it. We feel stressed. Who are the leaders in industry? Who are the leaders in nations? Who are the leaders in anything? The people who anticipate a problem before it even shows up and they solve it before it even happens. That's what the word anticipate means. It means to foresee and deal with in advance. And I can tell you one thing. This skill will give you more joy in your life than almost anything else I can imagine, other than learning to manage your own emotional state. And even that requires some anticipation, knowing the kinds of environments that might stimulate you to go into a lousy state and dealing with it in advance. What you're doing when you're anticipating is you're utilizing the capacity to step beyond the present moment and utilize the future as your leverage. Think about it. The people in our society that have been able to anticipate certain trends are the people that are the best in the world at what they do, and they are incredibly successful and wealthy. A simple example of this would be Bill Gates. Here's a young man who's now the richest man in America. How'd he do it? Was he an absolute genius? Yes, he was very, very bright. But there are a lot of other people brighter than him when he went to Harvard. In fact, that's one of the things he was most frustrated with. He used to be king of the hill. He went to Harvard. He wasn't the best. But he did one thing better than anybody else. He anticipated the growth of an industry called personal computers and a specific need that this industry would have, basic software. And you know what? He even anticipated the best way to market it, that if he went out and tried to sell this himself, he would never succeed. Instead, he made a decision that has made him hundreds of millions of dollars a year and royalties ever since. He decided to give that technology to IBM and allow them to promote it as the industry standard. Anticipation. What if you could have anticipated the idea of using satellites like Ted Turner? What if you could have anticipated the change in eating habits in our nation where people might eat good food by choice? Not because they're forced to or because they have to. They actually look forward to it. It's like their first step. What if you could have anticipated fat-free foods or yogurts? Just think about what you could have done with that. And you know what? If you look at some of the failures in your life, where have they come from? I would be willing to bet they came from your failure to anticipate. Think about it. In a relationship, you didn't anticipate that this person was no longer going to be satisfied with just being a homemaker. Well, you didn't anticipate the fact that because you took on a new job and you weren't there, that the connection wouldn't be as strong because you wouldn't even see each other anymore and just kind of snuck up on you. And pretty soon you didn't feel that same connection. Or how about with your kids? Have you failed to anticipate certain ways that they would interpret things or react to things in a way that maybe doesn't support them? See, if you look at the failures in life, there are things that came late because somebody didn't anticipate. Even successful people do this. Remember Zap Mail? You probably don't remember very much about it because it was here today and gone tomorrow. Brought to you by the same people that brought you Federal Express. But you know what? It came a little late when everybody already had a fax machine. Why would you go pay somebody else to send a fax for you? It makes no sense. That's called failing to anticipate. That's getting behind the eight ball. What's the cost of this failure to anticipate? Pain, frustration, overwhelm, feeling lost, feeling like there's nothing you can do. Nobody wants to pay that price, and yet we all do it at times because we don't anticipate. My most painful business experience I've shared with you before, the gentleman embezzled $250,000 and ran me $758,000 in debt. If I had just anticipated a few simple things in his character and his behavior, none of that would have happened. As a result of that experience, though, I've spent about the last 6 years of my life looking for any distinction I could find that could help me to anticipate how people, trends, and environments will change. And I am far from perfect at it. But what I do know has enhanced virtually every aspect of my life. I know my own businesses and my own personal relationships. One of the things I value most is somebody who anticipates my needs. Somebody you don't have to tell them I got this problem. Somebody says, oh, I noticed you're running late, so I already called John Smith for you. Or somebody said, you know, I noticed you were going in at 8 o'clock in the morning, but I found a flight that can do it for you at 7. I didn't ask him to do it. Or in a personal relationship, somebody who thinks about what's going on with you. They know you're in a tough state, and they come by one day with a fruit basket or some flowers or a little note. Or they just stop what they're doing and come and give you a hug. Doesn't that feel incredible? Not somebody you got to say, hey, I need your help. Somebody who notices what's going on, anticipates your needs. That person is so valuable in your life. And in business, that person is invaluable. You want to see your value to a company go up? You want to ensure and have a sense of certainty you're going to be successful with a company in the future? Then add more value than anybody else is adding by anticipating. And if you don't add more value, don't be surprised if all of a sudden you're not needed, even though you've been in a company for years. I read an article in Forbes magazine where they were interviewing some of the employees who were asking a new chairman of the board how he could let them go. How come I was good yesterday, one man said, but I'm not worthwhile today? And he said, listen, it's not you're not worthwhile. He said, you just got to know something. What you're doing is no longer competitive. He said, you know, when Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile, that was really powerful. But today, kids in high school run 4-minute miles. We can't live on yesterday's standards and expect to be the winner today. We've got to anticipate what are the standards of tomorrow and how do we create those standards right now. That's how we win the game of life. You watch in sports. The power of anticipation in sports is the difference between somebody who's a Hall of Famer in something, somebody who's a superstar, and somebody who's mediocre. The same thing is true in life. It's true in relationship. It's true in business. We've got to be able to anticipate where everybody's going around us so we can meet their needs. If we meet people's needs, they're going to feel fulfilled. We're going to strengthen our relationships. We're going to add more value, and we're going to succeed. This is one of the simplest secrets to life, and it's one we've got to apply daily. And I want to sell you on making this one of the most highly valued criteria in your life. I want to sell you on that this is a skill, that this is not just intuition or getting lucky and some people are able to anticipate and some people aren't, or it's something you can't do because it's too complex and the world's changing too fast. Garbage. I want to demystify this process for you because it is a process. Anticipating is a process, and not anticipating is the result of your own conditioning. Because that's the obvious question. It must be coming up in your head and you say, okay, Tony, well, there are a lot of things I can anticipate, but I don't. So why don't I? Because you get caught up in patterns. We all do, don't we? Patterns of perception. In fact, a word that we hear a lot in business these days is the word paradigm. What is a paradigm? A paradigm is nothing but an accepted way of thinking. A way of thinking that everyone seems to accept that goes unquestioned through time. In other words, it's a shared set of assumptions. An example of a paradigm that we all studied in history was the paradigm that the world is flat. Everyone assumed that the world was flat. There was no real absolute proof, but everyone accepted that way of thinking. It wasn't until a paradigm shifter, a guy named Columbus, came along and was willing to test those rules, test those barriers. And by the way, that's another way of describing a paradigm. A paradigm is a set of barriers, a set of rules about how to interpret the world, about what can and cannot happen, what will and will not happen. Now, you and I have spent some time in the past talking about belief systems. And certainly you might say, well, how is a paradigm different than a belief? Well, a paradigm is really a system of evaluating many areas of your life. You may utilize many different beliefs in order to make a decision on a consistent basis. That may make up your paradigm. In other words, your paradigm may be made up of many different beliefs. Now, rather than getting all caught up in this word, let's simplify it. A paradigm is a set of rules, a set of assumptions, a set of barriers that control how you perceive your life, what you think is possible or impossible, what you can and cannot do, what others will or will not do. Another simple way of looking at paradigms is to think of it in metaphorical terms as if it were a game. See, we all have games that we've played, and games are paradigms. What is a game? There is a goal. There are a set of rules of what you can and cannot do in order to achieve that goal. In order to achieve that goal, what do you got to do? You got to solve a series of problems based on the rules of the game. Well, in your life, you've got this game called life worked out. You may think this game is a game of respect. You may think this game is a game of competition. You may think this game is a game of being a victim. I doubt if the latter example fits you. Probably the former do, or something else. But the point of the matter is, you have an idea what life's about, what you can and cannot do, what other people can and cannot do, and you've got certain rules and barriers that guide the whole process. And along the way, you're going to be solving problems based upon your beliefs, your paradigms of how life really is. A good example of this metaphorically, again, would be like playing tennis. Tennis is a paradigm. It's a game with a set of goals. There are specific rules of how to do it. And it's your ability to solve problems that allows you to win the game of tennis. What happens? Your opponent hits the ball into your court and it gives you a certain level of problem. And what you've got to do is you've got to address it. But you've got to solve the problem of getting this from your court over into their court using only the rules of the game of tennis. You can't use a baseball bat, right? You can't catch it with your hand and throw it back over there. You've got to use those specific rules. And they limit the way you play the game, don't they? Just like your paradigms about relationship, or your paradigms about business, or your paradigms about yourself, control and direct what you are allowing yourself to do to solve problems or to produce results. Now, what's really neat is if you solve your problem, what you do is you deliver your problem to the other side of the court and you give your partner there a problem. And then he has to solve his problem of getting the ball out of his side of the court and into yours, again, using those same rules. And what happens is we keep trading problems back and forth until one of us is able to deliver a problem so big to the other person they can't deal with it anymore and we win. Now, what's interesting is this idea can really help you understand the concept of paradigm. Because the rate of change is no longer minor changes like just reinforcement or just a little small improvement. Overnight, industries are disappearing, and they're disappearing because they're not anticipating a paradigm shift, a wholesale change in the rules of the game. It'd be like if we said we're going to play tennis now, and now when you play tennis, you catch the ball and you throw it at the other person, and if you hit them, now you're successful at the game of tennis. Those are the kinds of shifts that are happening. They're radical, and we've seen them in virtually every area of our society, from relationships to business to the way we look at our own government. The rules of the game for the media have changed. The rules of the game for virtually every aspect of society not only have changed, but continue to change so rapidly, few people can keep up. But in our society, you must keep up. And let me tell you the good news. There are only a certain areas of life you have to focus on to really have the edge. And we're going to discuss a few of these here. And by the way, if there wasn't this incredible push of change in our society, we wouldn't be living in the exciting times we're in. You go, yeah, it doesn't feel very exciting to me right now, Tony. I'm going through some tough times. Yeah, but you know what? It's going to push you to another level. What do we really need then to master this principle of anticipation? What do we need to do so we can utilize paradigm shifts to our advantage? The first thing we've got to do is adopt a new belief system. And that belief system is that not only is change inevitable, but it is our advantage. The status quo is not to your advantage unless you're already on top and have mastered it for decades. Now, if you're one of those people, let me tell you your advantage. You're going to have to grow, which will make you happy because you're not going to be happy just sitting on top doing nothing. But for most people in life, they're still pursuing a way to become better, more successful. And if the rules of the game are changing, it means guess what? You are on an equal playing field with almost anybody else. I'll give you a fun example. I've been reading a lot of books recently because I really wanted to master this experience of anticipation. I wanted to make it more of a science. So one of the things I started doing is reading a lot of books forecasting the future. So I went back and I reread Megatrends from years ago, and then I read Megatrends 2000, and then I read some of Toffler's books, and then I read Joel Barker's book on Future Edge and managing the future. And as I started reading all these books, Faith Popcorn's book, obviously, The Popcorn Report. And what I decided to do is I thought, well, this is really wonderful. But what I'm doing here is I'm getting everybody else's view of the future, which is really valuable information. But I want to know, how are they predicting it? That was one of my major goals in meeting with some of these individuals personally. How are they predicting the future? In other words, in life, what I used to do is I say, who is really successful at something? It's something I want to master. And then I go find out what they're doing that makes them successful. I do the same thing. I model their actions and I get very similar results. And it allowed me to save myself a tremendous amount of time. I compressed time by learning by their experience. But as the years went by, I drove my modeling a little deeper. And I started asking not only, okay, this person's getting a result, what are the actions getting that result? But I started going a step deeper and said, what are the organizing principles that are allowing them to know that these are the actions to take in the first place in order to get those results consistently? And I began to pursue organizing principles, which is, by the way, all Power Talk is about. It's my chance to be with you and to share with you organizing principles. And by having this program, I got to continue to pursue new ones that I can share with you. Certainly, we need to review the ones that make sense. Repetition is the mother of skill. But I'm always searching for another distinction, another organizing principle that can increase the quality of our life. So with these people that are futurists, I started saying, okay, what are they doing? Then I started saying, how are they doing it? Where are these trends really coming from in the first place? And as I pursued that, I started looking not just at the trends, which all these books told me about, but how do you track trends? There's a great book called Trend Tracking. And this book describes the way of actually tracking. It's kind of like what these futurists do to start making their predictions. So now we knew a little bit about their actions. So then I said a step deeper. Okay, I can see how to track it, but where do they actually come from? And I realized that all actions, everything that we're doing, all the behaviors of the masses, those trends are coming from a conditioned way of thinking. So I started studying paradigms, the thought processes that are consistent amongst mass number of people, where a large number of people share the same assumptions about what the rules of the game are, about what's going to happen. They may be absolutely wrong, but if enough people believe it, people start to buy into it. Then I started saying, well, where do those assumptions come from? And where those assumptions come from through history. So I've been reading all these books on history and looking at how different ways of thinking through history have created certain consequences in our society. And then I dug even deeper and said, okay, where do these ways of thinking come from? What shapes the way we think and the way we feel in the first place? And I got back down to pain and pleasure. Now, why am I telling you all this? Because out of everything I've read, I've clearly come across one critical organizing principle that you must adopt to be successful in any time in human history. It's a belief system that if you'll adopt it, I guarantee you it will change the quality of your life forever. And the belief is simply this: the same level of thinking that has gotten you to the level of success you have today will not get you to the level of success you want for tomorrow and beyond. In other words, all that's worked for you up until now that you value so much may go out the window in a day. And you've got to not only know that, but anticipate that. Now you say, well, that doesn't feel very good. I don't like thinking about everything I've done that works, you know, may just go out the door tomorrow. I'm not saying it will. I'm saying it may, and you've got to be prepared for that. You can't be thinking because you're the best at what you do, you're always going to be the best at what you do just by making incremental improvements. Listen, if you worked in the carburetor industry, what happened? Here you were making the best carburetors in town. You were always making your carburetors better and better and better. And one day, guess what happened? Overnight, there were no more carburetors because they had a thing called fuel injection, which cut fuel usage from a third to two-thirds. Everybody needed one. Everybody wanted one. And all those skills that you'd honed for a lifetime were worthless. Or how about the vinyl record industry, where literally overnight it disappeared? Think about it. That's called a paradigm shift, where the rules of the game changed overnight. The rules of the game change, the barriers change, the approach change, and you know what? There are brand new winners, and the people that used to be winners are now losers. This is very good news for you because it means if you stay on the cutting edge, if you anticipate, there's always a way for you to make your fortune. There's always a way for you to be at the cutting edge. There's always a way to turn your company or your career in a whole new direction. But you've got to operate from this principle that says just because it's worked up until now and because it's made me successful doesn't mean it will tomorrow. This is so critical. I'm sure you read the book In Search of Excellence, right? It was a number one bestseller for years and years. That book reported on 43 of the best-run companies in America. But you know something? 14 of those 43 were in financial trouble within 2 years after that book was written. And you know what? Business Week did a study on them, and they said they all had one thing in common. They all failed to react and respond to changes. That's how they went from being the model company to the companies that were in financial ruin. Now you might say, well, Tony, I don't run a company. I don't own my own company. You're not even talking to me. Yes, I am. Because you know what? Those companies are nothing but a metaphor for your own life, for our own society. They're a reflection of the level of change. Listen, back in 1970, CBS was really having a tough time making a decision on whether they're going to put a show on the air or not. And they were really concerned about it. It was going really against the values of the day. You know what that show was? Mary Tyler Moore. Mary Tyler Moore show. Can you imagine why? Because she was a divorcee. Ooh. The truth is, that's one of the places that values originally get shifted. When mass number of people see a rule change on television and they grow to like that character, they very often will adopt similar changes in their rules. I'm not saying it was right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying we have to look at the consequences and know that they're there. Look at the changes in the paradigm of what can be said on the radio, what's said on television, the type and quality of language, the type and quality of images. Are those changing the rules of our society? You better believe it. Are they changing the rules of what's acceptable and unacceptable? You better believe it. Are those rule changes taking us in the direction we want to go? I guess that's everyone's individual decision to make. But you got to know that they're changing. And you got to know that those changes that we're seeing happening in society are affecting your personal life. They're affecting the person you're sitting across the table with for dinner, who you're hoping to go out with, and how they're going to look at a relationship with you. They're going to determine the kind of relationship you're going to have with this person 20 years from now, because I can virtually guarantee you it's not going to be the same as it is today, because the roles and the rules are going to continue to change and expand. This two-income household that we've adopted, right, wrong, or indifferent, that rule change, that was a paradigm shift. What has it done? It's changed the expectations of both parties. It's added tremendous stress on both parties, right, wrong, or indifferent. It's changed the structure of how our children are raised. And this has changed the direction of society as a whole. So paradigm shifts are things you must study. You must be aware of. You cannot afford to say ignorance is bliss. No, ignorance is poverty. Ignorance equals unemployment. See, a lot of people are unemployed because they couldn't see their own industry coming to the end because they're so busy just making a living instead of designing a life. We've got to anticipate. So I keep saying this to you again and again and again. So Robin, you go, stop it. How do I anticipate? Good question. Let me give you five simplistic approaches to help you avoid the trap of being caught up in your own paradigm. Then let me offer you the psychology of how human behavior becomes patterned. That is how we create trends, because we all know if we can anticipate certain trends, not just follow a trend, but anticipate it, we can avoid certain pains in our lives because we're prepared for it. And we can also experience pleasure because we can anticipate it and take advantage of the situation. Now, here's the first thing that can help you avoid the trap of being caught up in your own paradigm. And by the way, I see this happening all the time. The place that I see it most is my Date with Destiny seminars. Because there, we get to study people's paradigms. We don't just help somebody come in there and overcome their fear of heights. That's easy to do. We make global change. We find out every belief, every rule, every value, every reference that a person uses on a consistent basis to make every decision they make every moment they're alive. Decisions about what to think, what to feel, and what to do. And you know something? People walk in there with paradigms like women are horrible or men are horrible. They come in with a series of these things. And you know what? When you change somebody's paradigm, you change everything. But the reason they've not changed is they have not done the five things I want to share with you now. Number one, beware the unquestioned conviction. What do I mean by that? Well, you know, a belief is nothing but a feeling of certainty about what something means. So you feel certain your spouse is happy. You feel certain your kids are in great shape. You feel certain that your job will always be there, right? Nothing wrong with that. But when you get a conviction, it means you feel so certain about something and you're so invested in believing in something that you're not willing to take any new input. You're not willing to question even for a moment, hey, is there any possibility that your current job may not be here 5 years from now because a radical new technology or a radical new change in the marketplace's desires could wipe it out. If you're not willing to look at the possibility that your children may not be as good as you think for the moment, your ego gets in the way or your conviction that they're perfect gets in the way, then you can't create the changes you're committed to. You can't improve anything. We've got to be aware of these. Whenever you start saying this is the only way, you may be right. But stop and say, what if there was another way? What would it be? Or when you start saying something is impossible, ooh, I'd be real careful on that one. Because what was impossible yesterday is probable today. That's the pace of change we're in. So start thinking, start being aware of your convictions. And when you start feeling there's only one way to do something, break out and at least consider another possibility. That'll help you avoid getting caught up in your own trap. You know, a few nights ago, I had the privilege of spending the evening with a group of very influential people up in Los Angeles, two of which are billionaires. And sitting there talking with them, we talked about a whole series of things. And one of them there is a listener of Power Talk. And I started talking to him about paradigms. And one of the things that he said was that one of the most valuable lessons he ever learned was to not get himself caught in the point where he had such a conviction that because he was a billionaire, because he was so successful, because he's been successful at almost anything he does, that anything else he did would be successful. Or he said, if I had a business that was really succeeding, there was a time in my career where I started thinking, hey, no one can touch me. And then some cheap copy would come along, and I'd say, oh, that's some cheap copy. But he said, you know what I learned? Those cheap copies have a tendency to real quickly get real good. And all of a sudden, you're no longer the leader in your industry. You got to constantly question, how can you do it better? Rather than just feeling the conviction that what you're doing is the right thing because it always has been, and you've had that market for 60 years like the Swiss watchmaker. Be aware of the unquestioned conviction. Second, make sure you develop a new belief system, one you create certainty about. And the one thing you can be certain about is that change is certain. If you want to get certain about something, be certain that change is coming, and then you'll always be anticipating it. You won't be reacting to it. The third key is this: break your pattern of thinking in a linear fashion. This is what keeps you from getting what you want. We all get trapped thinking, oh, tomorrow, I know what tomorrow's going to be like. Let me look at today's sky. The sky looks really good. It's not going to rain tomorrow. It sure as heck does. Or you know what? You know, the last 2 months have been great weather. That doesn't mean tomorrow's going to be great weather. Or today is lousy weather. Doesn't mean tomorrow's going to be lousy. That's what happens in stock markets. People say, wow, look at the market. It's been going up. I better jump on. That's not the way to evaluate. You're thinking in a linear fashion. And if, well, you know what? It's a great way to get yourself killed financially. I've seen it happen to so many people. Does this happen emotionally? Yeah. Hey, my relationship's been great up until now. It's been great for the last 6 years. Doesn't mean it's going to be great tomorrow if you don't find a way to make it better. You can't assume that the status quo will remain. In fact, if there's anything you can assume, it's that it's going to be broken up, that something is going to challenge the status quo. If it doesn't change it, at least it's going to challenge it. And you want to be aware of it. So one of the ways you can change your life is don't think in this linear fashion. Maybe you want to start thinking in a cyclical fashion. Throughout human history, certain things keep coming up just like seasons. You know, when you're in the middle of fall and the weather's really nice, instantaneously, overnight, the next day, it can be winter. And if you don't have a thing called a calendar, which helps you to anticipate this, and you're thinking linear, the last 2 or 3 weeks or months, you're going to be taken by surprise. And you're either going to be uncomfortable or you're going to freeze to death. But on the other hand, if you thought in a cyclical fashion, you'd say, hey, things are going really great right now in my business. Things are going really great in my relationship right now. Guess what? There will be challenging times. That's not being a negative thinker. Winters do come. Let me right now figure out what I'm going to do so when winter comes here, I can ski. When winter comes here, I can make it even better. So when the challenging times show up in my business, I'm prepared. This is the thing that most people don't do. Robert Prechter, the man who was one of the top market forecasters, said these cycles of optimism and pessimism are predictable. That is, that means you can anticipate them if you think cyclically. He said, but what happens in the stock market is, what happens? People look around and things look like they're going really well and they're going up, 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 up. And so everybody else jumps on the bandwagon and they don't anticipate what's obviously going to happen. With too much enthusiasm, people overvalue products and services. They pay too much for those products and services. And eventually the bubble bursts and overnight it drops. But very few people anticipate it. That's why most people don't do well financially. It's why most people don't do well in relationships. It's why most people live in fear of change. I want you to make change your best friend. Think cyclically versus linearly. Think as an innovator. Think the unthinkable thought. And how do you do that? Go to step four. Ask questions no one else has the courage to ask. Ask questions no one else is asking about your industry. Ask yourself questions about yourself. It's so easy to get caught up and not want to look at yourself with a more critical eye. But if you were to raise your standards, if you were to raise standards for what your business needs to do for your customer, if you were to raise your standards for what do you need to do to make your husband or wife feel more loved than ever before, or your significant other, depending upon your current level of relationship, if you were to raise your standards for what you need to do to make sure your children are really getting the education they need, are really feeling loved the way they need to feel loved, are really getting the resources that they need to successfully compete in an ever-changing world, unless you're willing to ask those questions, you're not going to get new answers. And I'm also here to tell you something. New questions create new paradigms. I'm going to demonstrate that for you in a moment. The fifth key, become a student of possibility. Become a student of potentiality. Don't just allow yourself to get caught up in reading what everybody else in your industry reads or surround yourself with the same kind of people. You know something? One of my most valuable things that I do in my life that I love is the fact that I have such diverse friends. I mean, One of the times I had a really wonderful dinner at Thanksgiving, I'll never forget, we brought everybody in there together. They're all sitting down. There were 100 people at our house for dinner, and we're all looking around the room. And some of the people are people like Captain John, who works in the South Bronx for the Salvation Army. And we met him where we went out and fed some people on Thanksgiving one time years ago, and he's been a friend ever since. He's out there in the trenches turning things around. And then we have somebody else at the table, and he was the CEO of one of the major Fortune 500 companies. Then we had another good friend of mine who's a very famous actor. And then we had another guy who's a comedian, and we had a musician there. And then we had a few people that thought they were actors and musicians who aren't very good, right? That were just working at various normal kinds of jobs, doing normal kinds of everyday things, but they're really wonderful people. As I looked around the room and saw this diversity of people, and I got up to, you know, give our prayer and to say thanks, I said, you know, before I say anything else, I just want to say that I think God has an incredible sense of humor, because look at the diversity of kinds of people he creates. But you know something? That has been one of the most valuable tools in my life, because I don't get to just hear one point of view reinforced over and over and over again. I'm hearing so many different points of view, and that has helped me immensely to understand how people think. You know, I've had the privilege now of working with people in seminars and private therapies and business environments all over North America and around the world. That diversity is invaluable, and you must go get that diversity. The fastest way to get it is you can go get it by reading, because some of the most brilliant people in our culture have written books. And you know what? A lot of them don't agree with each other, which is fabulous. That's why I just got done reading these 10 books. Some of them contradict each other, which is wonderful, because then I get to decide what I believe and what makes sense to me, which allows me to make my own decisions, allows me to fail if I'm going to fail by my own conviction, or allows me to succeed by my ability to synthesize new possibilities. You've got to be a student of possibility. You got to study technology. There's huge technological change that's going to change the way we educate ourselves. It's going to change the way we entertain ourselves. It's going to change the structure of how people experience reality. It's going to create so many choices of entertainment, so many different movies, so many different channels that will provide different kinds of education, different worldviews, different paradigms. If you watch the Discover Channel, you're going to get a different set of paradigms about life than, for example, if you watch MTV. I'm not saying either one is right, but if you continually have our world where we're all getting different input, we're going to find that our society becomes more fragmentized than ever before. All of these situations provide incredible opportunity. The opportunity to grow, the opportunity to understand, the opportunity to comfort people around you, the opportunity to create products or services or concepts that can enhance the quality of life for society, opportunity to do well financially, the opportunity to become more stimulated than any time in human history. These are the times that we live in. It's an incredible time. It's a very painful time, though, if you're not prepared. It's a very painful time if you put yourself in one little niche. Today, everybody says they want a specialist, but those who succeed have learned to specialize in certain areas while they continue to be a comprehensivist in life. They're like Buckminster Fuller. They're constantly studying the principles of life that make the biggest difference. They're being diverse in their study, and I want to make sure here in Power Talk that you can consistently count on receiving information that will be diverse enough from a variety of different types of input. Those with a business background, those with a spiritual background, those with an educational background. There are so many different paradigms that we need to hear many other people's points of view so that we can expand our own. You don't have to agree with everything people say. I don't agree with everything everybody says, even the people that I interview always. But you know what? I listen. I entertain. I shut off my own idea and I say, hey, if I feel strong conviction my view is the right view, let me stop and really entertain their view first. Let me step out of my own box of filters and hear their point of view as well. And that has been invaluable in expanding the world, and I want to make sure you do that as well. In fact, this month, by the way, I think you'll enjoy the book. It's a little different than some of the books we've done in the past. It's called A Return to Love by Marianne Williamson, and she approaches some of the challenges of life, what I started out this Power Talk talking about, how to solve problems, from the concept of a spiritual point of view, and I think you'll find it invaluable regardless of your religious upbringing or background. I think it's generic enough that there's value for it. By the way, we did a paradigm shift this month in the way we did the book summary. Normally you get a book summary that goes through the whole book and does a little bit of writing about each chapter. This time we did the entire book summary on one chapter so that you would get a real taste and a flavor of this experience, and we're thrilled with it. Guess what made us do it? We're going to talk about what triggers a paradigm shift. One of the things that did is we really wanted this and the publisher wouldn't bend. So we changed the rules. We said, okay, what if we did one chapter? And they said, okay, we'll do it. What made us do it was pain. But what came out of it, by the way, was a great deal of pleasure. I think you'll enjoy it a great deal. The point of the matter is, in this fifth point of how to avoid being trapped in your own paradigm, how to avoid being surprised, become a student of possibility in what technology is bringing, in what entertainment is bringing, in education, And all the areas of our life, the limits and repair of your physiology, these are all changing. What else should you become a student of? Necessity. If you really want to be able to anticipate trends, you should become a student of necessity. What do people in society see as a necessity rather than an accessory? Because that drive, that demand of the large numbers of people in our society saying, we got to have something, puts mass number of people to work to focus on solving that problem. And when lots of people work on the problem and everybody wants it, we invariably tend to find a way to make it happen. The resources are there. I'll tell you what else you should be a student of. Consequences and inevitability. Certain things you know are inevitable. Certain things you know, if I do X, I know Y is going to happen. But most of us never really study consequences. We never look at, hey, if I make this decision and that decision, what's that going to mean to my life long term? Instead, we react. Let me tell you something. Again, reaction is not where you want to be. Reaction is the direct opposite of anticipation. Now, there's no doubt there are going to be areas in your life where you react because you're not prepared. But you want to make those the exception instead of the rule. If you were anticipating, you could deal with so many things so much more easily. It's not that you don't have the tools. It's that you're not anticipating and things strike you. This is why you've got to become a student of consequence, a student of inevitability. You must also become a student of pain, cultural pain, pain in relationships, pain within businesses. Because if you can find what the pain is or the pain that's coming and come up with a solution, a way to solve that pain, your future is assured. You will never have to worry about whether you have a career or not. You'll never have to worry, will you be able to succeed or not? Those who can solve problems, those who can eliminate pain, are those who are the leaders of our culture as a whole. They're the people who have the least pain in their life because they know what to do to protect themselves, and they have the most pleasure because they find solutions. Become a student of value. See, if you want to anticipate what people are going to want more of, if you're going to want to anticipate how to do well financially, if you're going to anticipate how to make yourself more valuable to a company, if you're going to anticipate what a man or woman would want in a relationship, you got to know what people value. And the more you understand what people value, the more power you have to anticipate what not only any individual, but what mass number of individuals are going to want. Becoming a student of value virtually ensures, if you act upon your understandings, that you will succeed in financial terms, you'll succeed in business terms, and you'll succeed in your personal life as well. It's your ability to anticipate what people value most and to meet those values that gives you the capacity to enjoy your life and do what you want to do when you want to do it in a way that empowers other people in the process. Listen, this is exactly what John Templeton has done. When I sat down with John Templeton, this guy is the number one money manager in the world since the 1950s. If you ask Sir John Templeton, what is the single most valuable skill that you developed in your lifetime? He says very simply this, what's made me successful is my ability to value what a company, product, or service is worth. That's it. He knows what it's really worth. So when everyone else gets emotional and they start buying something because everybody else is buying it and they get greedy, or they start selling it because everybody else is afraid, he looks at what it's really worth. You want to really anticipate? Become a student of value. So what do people value most? They value anything that can help them get out of pain and get into pleasure. I mean, isn't that what shapes all behavior? So how is a trend created? People get a significant amount of pain or pleasure. This causes them to question their paradigms, question the system they've been living with. They search for new alternatives, ways to get out of pain and into pleasure, and they try those on for size. If when they try those out, they work well, guess what? These people develop new rules that they now live by daily. They change the game. Radical change in the rules of the game. And what a critical mass. That is, enough people do this, or enough of the right people do this, influential people, or enough media shows people doing this, we then create a new trend in behavior in society as a whole. When we understand how this process works, we can start spotting trends before they occur. How? By asking yourself five questions. These five questions can help you start noticing trends. Trends in your own life, for that matter. Trends in your family and your community, trends in your industry, trends in the country as a whole. Here's the first question you want to start asking yourself if you want to be able to spot the trend before it occurs. And that is, what are major sources of consistent pain that will probably get even worse as the days, weeks, months, and years move forward? That's one of the first questions you want to ask. Now, an obvious answer to that, if you're looking at the level of society, is we're an aging population. As these people get older, people that are used to being active, outspoken, physical, a society of physical people whose focus has been on vitality, do you think there are going to be any challenges that these people get in their 60s and 70s? You know darn well there's going to be sources of pain. the pain of frustration and not being able to do what they used to be able to do physically if they don't do something to keep themselves in shape, if they don't change their physiology or their belief systems about what their physiology needs to be. There's also going to be pain in our society in that the majority of the population may want us to support them because, after all, they paid their price already. And sure enough, you and I might be in that age group. But the kids growing up today, are they being taught to take care of the elderly? I don't know. So what pain is going to be there? What kinds of pain are available? That's only one example. In your industry, what kind of pain is going to show up? What kind of pain from global competition? What kind of pain because of maybe limited resources or expanded resources? Another source of pain is technology. It can be great pleasure for some people, but pain for others. Technology changes the standard. What used to be really great, we now think is garbage. Technology can be a source of pain for some people because it can make what you do, your job, your career, your business, obsolete overnight. What technology out there could become a source of pain for various industries or for you in your own life? If you anticipate it, there's no question you can take advantage of it. If you wait to react, you'll be in the dust. And by the way, if you want to make your relationship better, you want to anticipate your relationship, think. Think in advance. That's what leadership does. Don't wait till there's a problem. Anticipate. Foresee any challenge that could come up and deal with it in advance before it is a problem. It makes your life so much richer. Think about your relationship. Ask yourself, what potential pain could come up in our relationship if I continue to have to be out of town 95% of the time? It wouldn't be too hard to figure out if you really thought about it, would it? So you need to ask yourself, what's the pain that's going to come up? What kind of questions will that bring up probably in the relationship? What alternatives may come up as a result of that? And what could that do ultimately to the trend, the long-term trend of my relationship here and or any relationship I'm in? Can you see how you can apply these questions to your kids, to your business, to your relationship, to your physical body? You know, what's the pain that's going to continue to get worse if you continue to do what you're doing currently? By the way, you can use these to get yourself to make change. Look at a small pain you got right now and make it bigger. Maybe the way you're eating right now is kind of a small pain. You look a little bit overweight and so forth. What if you made it intense? Intense enough you started to question your current ways. When you question enough, you started looking for new alternatives, healthy alternatives. And then you adopted some new rules about how you're going to move and how you eat and what you're going to do. That might create a whole new trend for your body. So physically, you have the vitality, energy, symmetry, strength, endurance that you really want. This is a pattern that won't just get you to notice trends when they're happening or track trends, but to forecast them. To anticipate them. And again, you want to experience the power of predicting, not the pain of reacting. Here's the second question to ask yourself to help you anticipate trends. And that is, what are some significant behaviors, beliefs, thought patterns, lifestyles that a significant number of people are beginning to question that used to be unquestioned? In other words, what are some significant questions people are asking where they're challenging what used to be accepted? See, whenever people start creating a challenge, when they start challenging what was accepted before, and they start to do that consistently, you can very often anticipate a trend that's going to come out of that. Because out of that questioning, you know they're going to go to step three, a search for alternatives. So that's another place to look. What are some of the alternative lifestyles people are trying right now? Like this idea of cashing out that we're seeing a lot of top executives doing. What created that trend? Too much pain. They got sick and tired of being stuck in their car or on the subway or in the train, traveling an hour, 2 hours a day, fighting the traffic, going through the frustration and doing the same thing on the way home till finally they hit emotional threshold. And when they hit emotional threshold, they started questioning, why the heck am I doing this? What am I really doing it for? They searched for a new alternative. They came up with it. They changed the rules. And now there's the beginning of a new trend in force, a trend that very well may expand, especially as technology makes it easier and easier. That is less painful. To isolate yourself from the traditional environment to get your work done. Interesting, isn't it? This is just another example of what alternatives people are seeking out. That might give you an idea of trends that may just be in their formation. And they may not be, but at least get you to focus and pay attention and anticipate. The fourth area, ask yourself, what rules are being broken? And I would circle this one in your notes, and I hope you're taking notes on what we've said, because this subject is complex. I'd play this back and I'd write down some of these key questions, put them on a card in front of me that I'd ask on a regular basis. What are some of the rules that are being broken? Because you know what? The rule breakers of our society are the trendsetters. The people who go out and break the rules, they are the ones that create the trends. But again, these rule breakers are doing so because they got a significant amount of pain. They questioned the old system. They didn't just accept it. They looked for an alternative and they broke the rule by seeking the alternative. Who's breaking the rules? What rules are being consistently broken and by whom? How often are they breaking those rules? Are the people breaking the rules people of influence in our society? If they are, that is the final step before a trend is created. Now, if a critical mass of people are willing to break the rules, a new trend will be in force. Use these five elements as a way to anticipate change instead of being struck by it. And you know what? Apply this to the areas of your life that matter most. Apply it to your career. Ask yourself, what kind of pain is your company currently under? Is that pain going to continue? Is it going to get worse? What divisions might they question are even necessary anymore? What alternatives are they going to seek? Maybe you ought to become an expert in the alternatives that they're currently looking at. What rules are they going to break? You know, and how's that going to create a new trend? There are major shifts going on in our society. What you've got to learn to do is be a leader by making your ability to anticipate one of your most valued assets. If you value it, if you constantly focus on it and improve on it, you will absolutely have the edge. And you'll have the edge in your company. You can have the edge in the quality of relationships. You can have the edge in how you raise your children, because you'll be able to anticipate problems before they occur and solve them before they come up. That's powerful. Anticipating trends in human desire and human behavior will also then give you peace of mind, because you won't be one of those people who lives in fear. You'll be living in a state of certainty, knowing that whatever comes up, you're prepared for it, and that preparation gives you the edge. So really, you have three choices. Either one, just wait for things to happen and try to react to them and lose the edge and experience lots of pain. Or two, anticipate changes and trends by noticing what's going on around you, becoming sensitive, making it a priority, and then, of course, utilize that information to improve the quality of your life. It is not enough just to anticipate. We're taking for granted one thing here. You realize you got to use your personal power. You got to utilize what you know to create some quality change. There is a third option. And that is not just notice trends, but to become a trend creator. Become a paradigm shifter rather than someone who just studies them. Now, how do you become a paradigm shifter? Well, first of all, you don't have to do that to succeed. But if you're the kind of person that wants to help shape what's happening in our society, one, understand what's going on around you, and two, develop or define a vision that inspires not only you, but the people around you. This is how you can begin to create a paradigm shift. This is what Bill Gates did when he was just this young kid that most people thought were crazy. He built a core team around him who shared his vision. This is what Tom Watson did to create IBM. And by the way, IBM is only here today because Tom Watson Jr. challenged his father's vision completely. He told his father that the paradigm was changing and that they had to shift to computers. They fought about it continuously. There was major upset. But in the end, his father listened. They changed their paradigm, and as they did so, they ensured their ability to become one of the most successful and profitable companies internationally. So step number one to becoming a paradigm shifter, get clear on what is your vision, something that inspires you and people around you. The second key to being a paradigm shifter, again, is ask questions no one is asking. I've said this three times in this tape because I got to tell you, this is the foundation to creating a change. You can't just feel pain. You got to ask new questions. That's how you get new answers. Joel Barker offers a question for people to ask. He says, ask yourself, what's currently impossible in my industry that if it was possible, it would change all the rules of the game? Asking that question might get you to anticipate something no one else has anticipated. I'm saying to you, ask the same question in your personal life. What's impossible in your life right now? What's impossible for you to do currently with your wife? What's impossible for you to do with your kids? And if it was possible, how would you go about doing it? If it was possible, how would it change the entire experience you have with your family? What's impossible to do with your physical body right now? And if it was possible, how would that change your whole life? And how would you go about doing it if it was possible? Asking this what if type of question helps you to break out of the paradigm and start to create new paradigms. Here's the third key to being a paradigm shifter, not just an observer or utilizer, but someone who makes it happen. Step three, if it makes sense, then break the rules. If you see that your common sense says doing something completely different than anyone's ever tried it before might make sense, then by gosh, go do it. Break the rule. Make it happen. That's how most success happens in business. That's how most success happens in our world. See, if you're trying something right now and you've been trying to make a change in your life and you keep trying to make little incremental improvements and little improvement here, little improvement there, and it's not working, maybe you need to make a whole paradigm shift. Maybe you have to change the entire game, the entire way you look at your life, the entire way you approach your physical body, the entire way you approach your relationship, what it means to you, how you spend time, where you go, where you live. Sometimes making that kind of radical change is enough to create the jolt that you need to take your life to a whole new level immediately. That's really what you might want to pursue. And by the way, I can give you some powerful examples of this. You know, traditionally, companies, just like individuals, develop their paradigms. This is how we do things. We've always succeeded because we live by these rules. Here's what we're always going to do in order to be successful. But the environment's changing. They don't change. And pretty soon, what made them successful makes them fail. A classic example of a company that didn't fall into this trap but almost did is Hewlett-Packard. Hewlett-Packard, back in 1983, was in an industry trying to create a printer for a computer. The engineers in the Boise, Idaho office of Hewlett-Packard decided that they wanted to create a desktop laser printer, something that would meet a need, because they perceived that there was a problem here. The problem was that even though everybody was accepting the standard for the moment, nobody was really happy with these daisy wheel printers, that somehow they had to figure a way to deliver an affordable printer to mass number of people. Now, that seemed like a pretty giant task. Here's the good news. They were in Boise, Idaho. They weren't at their corporate offices. So there was no one hanging around looking over their shoulder to make sure they're living by the rules. And according to the engineers at Boise, Idaho, that was probably their greatest gift. You know what they did? In less than a year, they created a desktop laser jet printer for $3,500 instead of a $100,000 machine that could only be used with a mainframe. It was absolutely unbelievable. Overnight, it changed the industry paradigm. And all those people making daisy wheels were in deep stuff, right? Overnight, they had to break all their own rules to do it. It's a fascinating story. But just know this, the results they produced were unbelievable. By making this paradigm shift, by anticipating the customer's need before the customer demanded it and creating something no one else had created, they catapulted their company to the top of desktop printing. The experience that they created there changed the way the company does business. In fact, it changed three primary rules that had made the company successful up until that time. The first rule that HP had always lived by was, we develop our own technology for all our own new products. We don't get technology from anywhere else. We own it. We created it. Secondly, all the equipment we designed to exclusively be used with other HP equipment. Very much like Apple computers did originally, right? They didn't want it connected to anybody else's stuff. And then the third one is we only market our equipment to a sales force that we've trained that calls directly on businesses. We don't use retail outlets. Well, guess what they did to create the laser jet? They broke all three rules because nobody's around to stop them. They went around and did it. They said, you know what? If we try and develop this technology ourselves, maybe we can do it, but it'll take forever. So they tossed out their rule. They said, we don't care if we create it or not. We're just going to design the best product. They went to Japan. They went to a company called Canon that you're probably familiar with. And they licensed the rights to use the engine that Canon had developed for its printers because they said it was by far the best out there. The time it would take to design it themselves to meet the same level of technology or to better it would waste the time they needed to actually enter the market and be the winner. In the end, it would cost them more to create it themselves than just license it. So they did, and they broke the rules. And no one knew about it at first. And when they found out, people got extremely upset. But these guys continued to break the rules. They didn't stop there. They then organized and developed this laser jet printer so it could be set up to work with an IBM because they wanted to be seen as the industry standard, not just something that was used with HP products. And lastly, they said, we want to put these in retail markets. These people broke the rules, and by doing it, they created a new paradigm. And by the way, what happens at a company level, just like it happens at an individual level, also happens on the global level. I remember years ago, Mr. Gorbachev was coming to Los Angeles and that he wanted to meet with a dozen or so leaders of the community. And that my name had come up from several people and that they wanted to invite me to come and attend this meeting. So to say the least, I was very excited about it. And I showed up at this meeting and got a chance to meet Mr. Gorbachev, who I have to say has an incredible presence about him, a true leader in terms of that when he walks into a room, he truly commands the room. And yet he's warm and friendly, very, very balanced man. And we got to spend, I don't know, an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours together with a small group of people talking about the issues of the day. And one of the questions that I asked him personally had to do with paradigm shifting, because I can't think of any one individual that's been more instrumental in changing the paradigms of more nations in the world. So I asked him, I said, Mr. Gorbachev, you know, you're responsible for more bloodless change than probably anyone alive in terms of a global nature. And I said, I'm curious, in order to create these changes, all the things that you're talking about you want to see happen in the future, all the things you think we need to do here in Los Angeles, all of these changes are doable. They all require a change in human behavior. Isn't that true? And he said, well, of course. And I said, well, don't all those changes in behavior first require a change in paradigms, a change in the way we look at the world, the way we make decisions, the way we think about ourselves, the rules of the game? In other words, a change in beliefs? And he said, absolutely. I said, then here's what I want to know. What is your strategy for convincing people to change their paradigm, for getting people to change their global beliefs about life or people? I said, I know you must have a phenomenal strategy, because I remember when our president at the time was Mr. Reagan, and he was calling you guys the evil empire. You know, I mean, I watched on television give you a big hug and a big award saying you're his best friend. That's what I would call a minor paradigm shift, wouldn't you? I said, what was your strategy for influencing, let's say, Mr. Reagan as an example? And he paused, and of course, he's speaking to his interpreter, and he said, well, he said, Mr. Robbins, I would never tell you what to do because you're already successful. And I just kind of laughed and said, thank you very much. But you know what was neat is he'd done his homework on everybody in the room. He knew who everybody was. Part of his key to success, I think. But the point of the matter is, he said, because that's also what Mr. Reagan tried to do with me initially. He tried to tell me what to do. And he said it didn't work. What happened was we'd get into a meeting and he'd start lecturing me. And he said I would stop him through my interpreter mid-sentence. He'd break his pattern, basically. And he would say, Mr. Reagan, with all due respect, you are not my teacher and I am not your student. You are not the jury and my country is not on trial. We're heads of two of the most powerful nations in the world. And we must talk. We must approach things differently than we have in the past. And by the way, we're talking about the three things to make you a paradigm shifter. Obviously, Mikhail Gorbachev is a paradigm shifter. How did he do it? By bringing in new rules like glasnost and perestroika. This changed the whole game. When all of a sudden people had information, when all of a sudden people could talk freely, this began to change the structure of the society as a whole. People could not only ask questions, they could ask questions in public. See, people experienced pain in Russia for many years. But no one dared question, because if they questioned, they'd be put in jail. If they questioned, their family would be broken up. All of a sudden, people were not only allowed to question, but question openly. They were allowed to search for alternatives. And as they searched for alternatives, they broke and changed the rules. And when mass number of people changed the rules, the trends of that entire nation and most of Eastern Europe changed overnight. It didn't take decades. It happened literally overnight. So this is the process of change. You want to be a paradigm shifter? Break the rules and do it intelligently. Don't just do it to do it. Don't just do it because it's fun. Don't abuse this approach and say, well, Tony said I should go break the rules. I'm just saying be intelligent. Rules are designed to empower us. If they're not empowering you, if they're not empowering your relationships, if they're not empowering your company, then it's time to change the rules. It's time to change the paradigm. Be willing to break the rules. Here's the fourth key, and we'll go through the others quickly, to being a paradigm shifter. Number four, search for new answers in unlikely places. Children can show you how to change paradigms. Go to an industry that has nothing to do with your industry and study upon that industry. Understanding how a helicopter works may help you run your business more effectively. If you start searching for answers, you'll get them, but you've got to give yourself more variety in the places that you look. I live with an attitude of expectancy that says you never know when, you never know who, you never know what's going to happen that's going to give the answer you're looking for. So make sure you broaden your experience of references. Step number five of being a paradigm shifter. After you've gathered and consumed all the key information you can, step five, trust your gut. Anybody who's ever been a successful paradigm shifter knows that as soon as you come up with it, you're going to be attacked. And the only way you're going to hang in there is if you trust yourself, if you trust your intuition, if you trust that sense of certainty inside you that says, hey, I believe this is right. There isn't enough evidence to support me yet, but I know it's right. I'll give you a wonderful example of this. Hal Sperlich, the former president of Chrysler. He worked for Ford Motor Company for 20 years. He was a major paradigm shifter. He was on the original team that created the original Mustang under Lee Iacocca. And after 20 years of trying to promote an idea through Ford when nobody would accept it, he left that company and went to Chrysler just so he could bring that idea to that company. You know what the idea was? Minivans. Now, nobody wanted to create a minivan. Everybody thought it was ridiculous. You know why? Because nobody was asking for it. There was no problem. Customers weren't saying, I want a minivan. He said, what we got to do is anticipate a problem the customer has they don't even know they have. There are all these ladies that are now trying to carpool. They're doing all this grocery shopping. They're carting their kids all over the place. He told them what he wanted to do is create a vehicle for the housewife that would be more useful than a station wagon, but still friendly enough in its height and its width and its handling to be practical for grocery shopping and carpooling. The breakthrough, by the way, in his design came when they came up with the idea of giving the car front-wheel drive. That concept was immediately opposed by everybody at Ford Motor Company. So when he finally got the Chrysler, still trusting his gut, he put himself on the line. You know what they did? They created a market that didn't exist yet. And as a result, they even cornered that market before anybody knew about it. The Japanese hadn't even thought of the idea. In fact, Sperlich said that if they didn't come up with the idea of minivans, today Chrysler would be gone. Absolutely no question. It's been the mainstay of their profits. Why? Because one guy trusted his gut, broke all the rules, had a vision, kept asking questions nobody was asking, kept at it consistently. That requires trusting your gut. Does this mean your gut's always going to be right? No. Fred Smith trusted his gut to create a thing called Federal Express. His professors at Yale told him he was crazy. Everybody in the industry said they're crazy. No one's going to pay that kind of money just to have overnight service when obviously they can get it from the mail carrier. But you know what? He trusted his gut and he was right. He was wrong on Zap Mail, however. So there's no guarantee trusting your gut's going to give you the right answer. But overall, it'll get you to follow through and it'll give you the chance of breaking the pattern and winning as a result. Here is number 6 of the 7 points. Prepare for pain. If you're going to be a paradigm shifter, I got to tell you something. Get ready for some pain. Very few people like somebody coming in and saying, everything you've been doing up till now is garbage. We're going to do it a brand new way. Or I've got a better way than anything you've ever done, even though you've worked on it for 10 or 15 years. Plus, you got to remember, most of these paradigm shifters come from outside the system. So people don't like that. They attack these people. They're afraid of them. I don't care if their name is Copernicus, or if their name is Turner, or if their name is Fred Smith, or if it's Disney, or if it's Tom Watson. No one who's invested in the current paradigm wants to hear that there's a better way that they aren't doing that requires massive change. We don't like that idea, so we try to find a hole in the idea, and if we can't find a hole in the idea, we attack the individual. We talk about how they're not qualified. In fact, there's a great quote that says, all truth goes through 3 phases. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is viciously attacked. And third, it is accepted as self-evident. That's the normal process that paradigm shifters have to go through. And I don't care if you're trying to create a minivan for 20 years or you're trying to get your son or daughter's teacher to see there's a different way of presenting information that's more effective, or trying to get your spouse to see that, hey, the rules of the game in a relationship are different now, that they got different responsibilities, you got different responsibilities. I don't care what kind of change. Prepare for some pain. How's that for some excitement? Well, let me give you the last point. 7, prepare for pleasure as well. If you're willing to consistently pursue your vision, to not give up, to keep that sense of certainty, and to be flexible in your approach, then you can prepare for ultimate pleasure. Because one day, your vision will be realized. And when it is, it will change the way mass number of people think about health, or think about your business, or think about relationship, or think about anything. That requires tremendous internal faith. But that faith will be rewarded at a level that you can't even imagine. When you start creating a path or a path never existed before, just remember this: life rewards those who contribute on a massive scale. And you know what? If you are willing to challenge the paradigms that currently exist and bring an alternative that enhances the quality of life, and you're willing to stick with it till it comes to be, then all the pain will be worth it, because you'll have the pride of knowing that what you did has truly made a difference. And by the way, I saw a neat example of this. I saw a program on the Essence Awards, where Essence Magazine selected 8 women they called torchbearers of change. And I was impressed by all of these women immensely. But let me give the example of one of them. Her name is Bertha Gilkey. Here is a woman who grew up in an environment that didn't exactly support her, i.e. she was told her whole life that she wasn't pretty, that she'd never amounted to anything, she wasn't intelligent, all of which obviously not true. But what happened was, when she was 11 years old, she moved to St. Louis, into this little community that throughout the years of her growing up deteriorated into a project, into tenements. It got so bad that the gangs completely took over and they were doing drug business everywhere. Crime was rampant. It got so bad as an environment that the city of St. Louis finally decided they were going to destroy the building, actually demolish the building, tear it all down. Well, that is what it took for her to have enough what? What's the first step in our 5 steps to creating a new trend, whether in your own life or anybody else's? She got enough what? Pain. A significant amount that pushed her over the edge, where she began to ask new questions. Like, how could they do this? Why is this happening? What can I do to change this process? And as she started asking new questions, she searched for new alternatives, something else that could make it work, a new paradigm. And she started to educate other people to that paradigm. She changed the rules of the game and created a brand new trend in our nation as a whole, one you don't hear too much about, but one that is a phenomenal thing we should all know about. What she did was, she got so mad, she said, that she got everybody together, all the other mothers in her apartment complex, and said, you know what? No one's going to help us. There are no more free rides. People don't care about poor folks anymore. She said, if you don't change, you're going to die. We're going to lose our homes. We're going to lose everything. She said, we're not going to wait for somebody else to clean up our buildings. We're not going to wait for somebody else to get rid of this crime. We're going to do it. And she got all these mothers fired up like you cannot believe. She got them to totally question the paradigm that they'd accepted of saying, well, we got to wait till somebody helps us. She created a new paradigm. We're taking back control of this place. They not only got rid of the crime, but then all these individuals who didn't have a lot of money completely revamped their own building, even though they were just tenants in it. They weren't owners. They went out and started cleaning it out. She said, no one else is ever going to urinate in these elevators again. And they started making sure everybody there had a new standard for the quality of life there, a new set of beliefs. And they went around educating, inspiring, and threatening everybody in the building to make sure they held this new standard. It got so incredibly good, the city of St. Louis not only decided not to tear it down, but through a series of negotiations that she headed up, they actually converted it so that the tenants became homeowners, condominium owners. Now, she became so successful at this, it became a new paradigm that she promoted across the nation. And today, she's personally responsible for what's now called the tenant management movement, where she's helped to improve or convert over 16,000 public housing units across the nation. This is a paradigm shifter. By the way, do you think she went through the 7 steps we just mentioned? Did she create a vision and inspire others with it as well? You bet. Did she ask questions no one else was asking about what should be done, how it could be turned around? You better believe it. Did she break the rules? Every rule you can imagine. Did she put herself in a position where she searched for new answers in unlikely places? You bet she did. Did she get herself in a position where she was willing to trust her gut even though no one around her said it would work? In fact, many people said she was crazy. Did she get a lot of pain? You bet. Did she get an unbelievable amount of pleasure? The answer is yes. She has the pleasure of knowing she has created a greater level of human dignity for families all across this nation because she raised her standards and wasn't willing to accept the current paradigm. That's power. That's a paradigm shifter. Bill Gates, stand aside. There's a lady of real power. And I got to tell you something. If you want in your lifetime to have your dreams be real, you must become a master of anticipation. And if you really want to be a leader, you got to become a paradigm shifter, not just a paradigm follower. And you know what else? Make sure you get excited when you see turbulence, when you see upset. Get excited, because upset probably means that we're about to see a change. In fact, if there's enough upset, you can guarantee a change is going to happen, because people are going to start questioning, searching for alternatives, creating new rules, and creating new behavior. And you want to get excited about that. You want to now start noticing that everywhere. Notice it in your company. Notice it with your kids. Notice it within yourself. This will give you now a sense of confidence because you know that pain is going to lead to change. You know what? It'll lead to change for 2 reasons. Number 1, because when there's enough pain, people are more willing to accept fundamentally new approaches to solving almost any crisis because it's brand new, because they got so much pain they want to try things they normally wouldn't try. And secondly, when there's enough pain, there's more of a demand for change. So more individuals start working on a solution. And that increases the chance that someone's going to come up with one. So next time you start seeing that, wow, our society's really in pain right now, get excited. Say, you know what? At least we're not complacent. We're going to make some major progress here, and I've got a chance to understand, take part in, maybe even profit in the changes that are going to occur in the future, because I'm going to anticipate them. I'm going to notice them before they occur, and I'm going to figure out how to take advantage of them. That's a phenomenal place to be. Peter Drucker, the dean of management, has been quoted as saying, significant competitive advantage lies with those organizations and individuals who anticipate well in turbulent times. Well, these are certainly turbulent times. But even in the turbulence, even with all the change, even with all these paradigm shifting, what can you hold on to for some certainty? You can hold on to a belief that says certain things are eternal. Paradigms may come and go, but you know what? The law of gravity is going to stick around. There are certain things, it just doesn't matter what paradigm you have, they're going to affect you. And there are certain principles in life that are going to shape how your life turns out no matter what paradigm shows up. These laws of life, these principles, have to be applied to any paradigm you're a part of in life if you want to be successful. What are the principles of success that are everlasting? Things like loyalty, things like discipline, commitment, persistence, faith, the desire to constantly improve, balance, curiosity, compassion, love, anticipation. You know what? We could go on and on. Just know that even in changing times, there are certain things that never change. Those things that have everlasting value. Those things like your relationships. Those things like your connection with your Creator. So make sure that while we've talked about constant change, you know there are pillars of strength that can hold you up through time. Just make sure you anticipate the changing environment so you don't have to deal with it by reaction, but by aggressive utilization that allows you to create the momentum that you deserve to have in your life. And by the way, to reinforce this session's message, I made the interview this month with Dr. Stephen Covey, the gentleman who wrote the national bestseller, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. The reason I picked Stephen is because he is a totally principle-driven man. I have tremendous respect for him. Not only are his principles sound, but they'll inspire you to hold yourself to a higher standard. And I think you'll enjoy the interview. I enjoy doing it with him immensely. So I think this will reinforce the idea that while there are paradigm shifts happening in society, there are paradigm shifts you need to make within yourself. So what's your homework on this short little power talk that I gave you here? I went a little crazy, but I'll tell you what, paradigms are important. The power to anticipate, I've said it a zillion times. Make sure you learn to value it. Make it a skill, not something that strikes you every now and then. And how do you make it a skill? Through use, by constantly educating yourself to what's happening in the society as a whole. What's your assignment? Number one, I want you to answer that question. What is a major change that could happen in your industry, in your company, with your career, that probably wouldn't happen? But if it did, it would change everything. And I want you to write down the answer to that question. Maybe come up with three scenarios. I just want you to anticipate the possibility. This is not a closed loop, like this is what's absolutely going to occur. I just want you to think about it. Because stimulating yourself to think about possibilities can open up new possibilities where you're no longer reacting, where maybe those things won't happen, but just thinking they might happen might trigger you to come up with a new idea for your business, a new idea for your career, a new way to make your relationship better. And by the way, you can relate this to your relationship just as easily. What right now seems unlikely or impossible that if it did happen, it would change at all? And how could you utilize advanced knowledge of knowing that change was coming? Just brainstorm that out in your journal if you would. And here's the second thing I want you to do. Write down a change you've been wanting to make in your life. Something you keep thinking about, you keep trying to improve a little bit, but it just doesn't work. And I want you to come up with a completely brand new way of approaching creating that change. Maybe a brand new way of looking at the challenge itself. For example, maybe instead of going and making some minor change, maybe you do what my old teacher Jim Rohn used to do. He said, you know what? I used to believe that if you could change your life in one day, but you got to commit and act. Do something crazy. Do something outrageous. Do something that signals your mind, this is going to be a radical change, not a minor change in my life. Decide on one action you're going to take that's going to demonstrate to you that you're changing the rules of the game. I'll give you one I did for myself just recently that really has changed my life. I've been living the last few years an incredible life where every single day I get excited about what I'm doing, but I also tend to overload my back with my mouth. And that is because I want to do everything all the time. But man, sleeping 2, 3, 4 hours a night and still feeling like you're behind is a bit frustrating. So my wife introduced the paradigm shift. She came and said, guess what? I said, what? She goes, I've canceled all your meetings for today. I said, what? She said, you're taking a day off. I don't care what you say. She said, even when we go off to Fiji and we go there 5, 6, 7 days, you don't take the time off. You're like the tour director, making sure everybody has a perfect time because you want them all to be so happy. I said, yeah, and at the end of it, I feel like I need a vacation. She said, yeah, I've watched you. She said, I've canceled all your meetings. They can all wait. You're going to go play today. I said, play? But this is play. She goes, no, I mean play that has nothing to do with what you normally do. I was like, I don't know how to do that. What do you mean? Right? At first, it was kind of tough. It totally broke my pattern. So you know what? I took the day off, but I found myself at the end of the day already doing creative things. She said, no, get out of the house. Get away from the office. Just go do something else. So I went out and played some basketball, and then I went to a movie. You know, and then I read a book on the beach. I couldn't remember the time I just sat on the beach and read. I mean, I had all this one day. It was so cool. Then I went and sat in my own jacuzzi. I hadn't seen the thing in about 6 months. It was really great. And so by the end of the day, I thought, you know what? She said, you're going to do this once a week. I said, once a week? What are you, crazy? I'll never be able to manage it all. She said, you're going to have to find a way. What you have is a set of barriers right now. You've been telling me about these paradigms. Well, it's time for you to apply it to yourself. So I said, okay, I hear you. You're right. So I changed the rules. I said, once a week, I'm going to have a day off. Now, I don't do it every week, quite honestly, but I've been doing it for the last 2 months. I've been getting a day or half a day in there. Or if I don't get a whole day in there, I get a couple mornings where I just go do something. And what I did is I took up polo. I found some new sport that required me to totally focus only on it, to challenge me. It has given me more joy and more fun. I've committed a new act. Polo is that act for me. The act is taking that morning, each morning, and taking an hour or two and going and playing. And what it's done is it's made me better in my business. It's given me more joy. It's given me more fun. It's given me the ability to do all kinds of things I hadn't done before. Find something for yourself that is a change in your paradigm. If your paradigm is everything is work, then add to your paradigm play. If your paradigm is everything is play, add some work. What a concept, okay? Actually go do something, you know? That might be a nice approach as well. And here's the final key, third piece of homework. I want you to brainstorm a set of principles that you knew if you focused on these principles, you would be successful at whatever you do as long as you also anticipated. For example, if you're really disciplined and you're loyal and you're loving and you're compassionate and you're committed, but you don't anticipate change, you'll still have a difficult time succeeding in some environments, right? You can be a disciplined, committed, loyal person who makes carburetors, but you got to anticipate change as well. But if you anticipate change, but you're not disciplined, you're not committed, you're not loyal, you're not loving, you're not compassionate, you're not going to succeed either. Not long term. So make a list of some of the principles, those character traits that are critical for you to live by in order for you to feel good about yourself and for your life to work. Now, I've dumped a lot on you in this power talk, but I haven't talked to you in a while, so I thought I'd dump the whole load. Go out there and turn some paradigms upside down, break some rules intelligently, have some fun, and I look forward to being with you soon. Till then, remember to live with passion.